fucking livid that we are stuck in the timeline where Alex Jones is right. Kind of works.
Why aren't the Amish afraid of COVID? Because they don't have TVs.
As I said, democracy is a system that reinforces authoritarian ideals.
I hope I don't get canceled. Talk to Steve.
Being a victim of a tragedy doesn't make you an expert in public policy.
Well, I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
Remember, they lost the Afghan war 10 years ago.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
They said, you don't get to tell us no. We're the state health department. And I said, hell no.
It wasn't making Christianity better. It was making rock worse.
What the fuck do you have on your face, Olivia?
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies and raise them to not be stupid.
I remember thinking, man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, shitposters, and people of the internet, thanks for tuning into another episode of O'Donnell for Liberty. As always, I'm your host, Justin. Before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether YouTube, Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or over on the air at LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and sharing with your friends. If you enjoy the content, you can join our production team by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell for Liberty. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell4Liberty. And make sure to check out sneckswag.com for all your favorite Liberty merch, including some brand new designs for t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, coffee mugs, tote bags, and more. Again, that's sneckswag.com, and check out the awesome new collection of ungovernable merch today. If you want to keep in touch between shows, follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. All these links can be found in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, as well as on O'Donnell4Liberty.com. So check the description for that link and make sure you check it out today. Now, corruption is running rampant through the Libertarian Party. Everyone is confused as shit. Because if we can't trust libertarians to govern honestly, then who can we trust? I say nobody. But joining me tonight to talk about the debaucherous and base corruption plaguing libertarian state affiliates, Delaware's one and only Dave Casey. Dave, how are you tonight?
What's up, man? Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, you've kind of been at the heart of the shittiest of the shitstorms because of all of the base corruption and affiliate takeovers and nonsense going on so far. Delaware is the only one where the LNC had a chance to make things right and didn't.
Yeah. Some people would say that they kind of, you know, last minute gave a little something there, but no, for sure. They had ample opportunities to just do the right thing. And they chose not to do that. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Cause I think we have a, you know, just to get to the heart of it, man, we have a corrupt, hollow, LNC filled with people of bad character, not all of them, but too many of them to get anything done.
And things have only gotten really worse. I know a lot of people are mad at Josh Smith for taking the Christmas holiday to call for the termination of an LNC staffer who was doing some shady shit on her off time. And I feel a little bit bad for that because I messaged him the night before and said, hey, you should do this. And I didn't even realize it was Christmas. I guess I've been spending too much time with Jews and not enough time with the good Christians in the world, like Jacob Daniel, remind me it's Christmas.
Now I can blame you. That's cool then.
Sure. So I was telling a friend today, like, why would Josh do that on Christmas? I'm like, I asked him to do it, and I didn't even realize it was Christmas. Half those screenshots are ones that I sent him.
Yeah, that was, listen, Josh is my boy. In fact, I'll say it right now, I don't think anybody has done as much for me in this, like, liberty space as Josh has, and I love that dude. If I was advising him, I probably would have said, wait till the 26th, bro. But that doesn't take away from the fact that that girl who's on the payroll should be called out exactly in the way that he did it. That's, you know, prime example, man. Thank you, my love.
Right. And I mean, even in the way he did it, like, some people are mad that he went and put it on the public list for everyone to see, which violates the policy manual about confidential staff things. Nobody would have known if you put it on the private list. It never would have gotten out because the EPCC and the LNC wouldn't have done shit about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, man.
Sometimes you got to make a stink.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I mean, I was looking at Twitter on Christmas. It didn't really bother me, but I am hyper aware of like optics and things like that. And that, you know, these people, again, talking about people with bad character, these are like the worst people on the planet, and they'll be the first ones to clutch their pearls and go, "Oh my God, it was Christmas." You know, like shit like that. So, you know, I have some sympathy there, but yeah, man, that chick should be fired. So now that it's after Christmas, let's fucking pass that around and get that girl fired.
Get her fired hard. The craziest part to me is, like, for anybody who's not in the Massachusetts Libertarians Facebook group, I'm still in it because I used to live in Massachusetts and they never kicked me out, never removed me. And that's where I got all the screenshots for Josh from. But George Phillies, one of the old heads of the Libertarian Party, he's been involved mm-hmm. since the very beginning. He's donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the LP and to LP candidates over the years. And he is most well known as the one and only anti-Ron Paul libertarian mm-hmm. who was against ever letting Ron Paul in the LP, against ever letting the Ron Paul revolution or Ron Paul movement have any kind of impact on the LP, and thinks it's bad for libertarianism to let Ron Paul have an influence, has taken the side of the Mises caucus over how that woman treated him.
See, anybody who detracts at all is an instant Nazi, dude.
That's all she could. She called him a racist when he asked if she supported free speech. And he's like, "Well, fuck you. I guess I'm taking my checks elsewhere."
Dude, I haven't known that guy. I actually had my first interaction with him in a Facebook group like a couple weeks ago, and I took a screenshot of it. I actually got some traction on Twitter, but like you know, he said that what happened in Delaware wasn't, you know, up to par or something like that, you know. And I said, "Oh yeah," like I had this screenshot of his donations to like, you know, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and all these, you know, like hard Democrats. And he was like, "Oh yeah, they were good on like some First Amendment issues." So I sent them, you know, the max donation he could possibly send to these people. I'm like, wow, like that's not particularly libertarian. But yet I come to find out after that how many thousands of dollars he spent on libertarian candidates and otherwise, man. But yeah, that's, you know, when it comes down to it, dude, follow the money. Like if the narrative is Ron Paul can't come in the party, it's probably because some asshole is spending all of his fucking cash to make sure that doesn't happen.
Sure, follow the money. Sure, at George's donations, it's an interesting thing to bring up because I'm on that list. Anytime I run for office, I run for office a lot as a libertarian. The very first check I cash that starts the whole campaign is a max donation from George Phillies.
Wow. Okay. So and, he does. He's all over the map then.
Yeah, he's all over the map, and I don't even live in Massachusetts. He doesn't live in New Hampshire. It's one of the first emails I write is to Dr. George Phillies. Like, "Hey, I'm running for office again." He's like, "Where can I send a check?" Max donation without question, and it helps me get the campaigns going, and it's been great for that. I've asked him in the past about why he gives to people like Ilhan, but he's also given to like Jeff Sessions on the other side.
Come on, man.
And his answer is, "Well, they are the worst of the worst and they make the other parties look horrible, so I want them to be the ones winning the primaries."
I don't buy that.
I buy it because I know a certain level of autism believes that. And a professor of mathematics who's written books on game theories and has designed some really popular board games in his life has enough money to burn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he's highly educated, and I don't know him well, but I'm instantly skeptical of people like that who just don't strike me as, you know, like I know a lot of libertarians, man, and I know like kind of, you know, different shades and everything like that, but he doesn't strike me as the guy that would want to run in these circles. Like he might strike me more as the guy who would want to like run the circle and keep it a certain way, which again, you got money, it talks, but.
Well, no, absolutely. And my first interaction with him ever was a hostile one. And when I first started getting involved in the LP, it was in 2016. I was a member. I had voted for Gary Johnson in 2012. Voted for Carla Howell before that, but I never got involved and I never did anything until 2016. Perfect storm came up where I was unemployed, just got out of the military, had just quit my job with FEMA because I decided I didn't want to work for the government anymore.
Good call.
Like, I'm like, I got money. I got fun employment going on. What am I going to do? It's like, oh, they need help petitioning for ballot access. I'm like, oh, I'll go do that. Next thing I know, I was elected onto the state committee. Then I was on the LNC. Shit kind of just spiraled out of control from there. But George Phillies was the state chair at the time. And when I first started getting involved, I came from, you know, I helped write the ICS manuals for FEMA, Incident Command. While they are a government program and a government project, the principles of like command and organizing groups to do things is pretty straightforward and universal, especially when you're dealing with like disaster response or business working in small scale organizations. And I had read Falkovich's Swarmwise, and I'm like, this, a lot of this translates to politics. Why don't we do the Libertarian Party more like this, like small groups working on individual projects and just go. And it was a whole lot of top down, no, everything has to be by the book and done this way from George Phillies. And then it came to convention planning, and he wanted to have the state convention at a bar with like 20 people. And I'm like, screw that. And I took over, and we booked a hotel, had a huge convention. Hundreds of people turned out, and it was the biggest one the state party had ever had. But through all of that, I never met him in person, because Massachusetts, like, it's not that small of a state, and it's pretty diverse. And where I lived on Cape Cod and where he lived in Worcester, it's a 2.5-hour drive and a completely different culture of an area. So I never went out there. I never visited, met him. When I finally get to meet this guy at a state committee meeting, this guy who's been in group chats and on Facebook telling me how awful I am and how I'm ruining state party. And one of his problems was that we were getting ballot access for the party. He firmly is against ballot access in Massachusetts. He thinks it makes it harder because then the state regulates your primary.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Yeah. I walk into this room and he's like, oh, hi, you must be Justin. I'm Dr. Phillies. I'm like, I did not expect. It's like hearing Todd Hagopian speak for the first time. It just shocks you. Like, this doesn't match your personality online whatsoever.
Yeah. But it does help to meet people in person. It really does. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I've ever had a positive debate with George Phillies where we're on the same side of anything.
Yet he keeps sending you cash when you run. I gotta say, that's pretty cool. He's helping libertarians, you know, that's cool. I'll give him
and
that.
Especially like the past year and a half, he's been leading the train of anti-Mises caucus, stop the takeover.
Yeah.
He was pro-coup in New Hampshire. He was in favor of the coup in New Hampshire.
He's in favor of the coup in Delaware. That's why I'm that's why I've been like, fuck George Phillies.
Right.
It's my house.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah. But then it comes to all of a sudden, Tara DeSisto says to him in a Facebook thread, racist speech is harmful. He's like, well, fuck you. I'm out. Yeah. And he didn't even say anything racist. She just said, would you condemn racist speech pretty much? He's like, no, it's free speech.
Probably due to her hair. I didn't know. Listen, I'm still learning some of these people. I met Tara DeSisto in Boston when I came over there. I was like, oh, yeah, you're just the T-shirt selling lady over there. You brought bagels. Thanks. All right. Good to meet you. You seem sweet enough. Right. And then people were like, oh, no, she's awful. You don't want to, you know, she's bad news. I'm like, oh, all right. And then I started hearing this stuff. I went on her Facebook or her Twitter page. I'm like, let me see what she's talking about. You know, like, let me see what she's passionate about. Let me see what she's tweeting about. She hasn't tweeted since fucking January 6th.
Yeah, she's blocked me. She's on Twitter. She just doesn't tweet. She just scrolls.
Oh, she tweeted like 10 times on January 6th, though, about
and hasn't tweeted since. Not a goddamn word. Yet she blocked me this week.
There's a word for somebody who is really, really passionate about January 6th and nothing else. Like, you're a fucking asshole. And you're not a libertarian. Come on. Get out of here. And you shouldn't be on the payroll. Jesus Christ. Like, this is just shocking.
Well, the crazy part is, like, I started digging because I'm a vindictive kind of a person. And she's not only is she on the payroll of the LMC, but she's on the board of Rank the Vote Massachusetts, which is a progressive PAC that supports progressive candidates and has never supported a libertarian candidate.
Yeah.
While being on the payroll of the Libertarian Party. She wasn't a libertarian before she joined the party. Anybody who watched Karen Ann Harless' stream last night knows that, but I knew beforehand because I was on the LMC when she got hired, and her getting hired was a completely backroom deal too. The LMC never voted on it.
Yeah. See, what are they doing hiring Democrats to come in and work for the Libertarian Party? Like, that's, I don't know, man. That's fucked
up. So I had actually made an argument because there was a couple of people who'd applied for that job and for the executive director job who were longtime Libertarian Party activists who just weren't qualified. And I do believe that the party as a business entity has a problem with promoting people from within who are completely unqualified for the jobs that they're being put into. Like the new communications director, Rebecca Cogdon, LP Texas vice chair.
Yeah.
I looked at her LinkedIn. She has no experience whatsoever and has no clue, like absolutely no resume that would support her being in that role. Yet she's being put in that role.
Yeah, I think she's buddies with the chair. That's what, you know, they got their little thing going.
Tara's actually qualified for the role she's in.
Professionally, right.
Professionally. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the Libertarian Party could stand to reach more outside of its bubble to bring people in who are qualified to help run the organization the way a business needs to be run. But you got to have some kind of litmus test.
Yeah, I would just, yes, that's exactly right. Like if you were apolitical, you were just like, oh, I have no opinions about politics, but I could really help you in this area. I'll be like, okay, well, let's see how that works out. But if you're a literal, like, progressive Democrat who's passionate about that, like, you should not be hired. Same with, you know, if you are a passionate Republican, you should not be hired to handle any of our communication.
Honestly, who I would look like the perfect person to hire, I think, for like an executive director or fundraising director for the Libertarian Party would be somebody who has a resume of fundraising for Donald Trump and Barack Obama. Because they don't have any principles. They'll work for whoever writes the check, and they're really good at their job.
I'll say whatever it takes, baby. Whatever it takes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
And we need people who know how to do the job. And like, when people were getting pissed off, when I used to be on the anti-Mises crowd just because I had disagreements with Mike Heiss about how he ran the organization, mm-hmm. not anything in the platform or what the Mises Caucus stood for, just the way messaging was done and put out, I disagreed with. And I used to tell people on the Prague crowd when they were getting all super upset, like, well, they're bringing alt-righters in. I'm like, okay, teach them about libertarianism. It's like, they're recruiting. Like, the Radical Caucus used to get pissy and bitchy that you were bringing in people who didn't understand libertarianism. And instead of saying the Prags are taking over and fighting to kill the Prags, they started going to all the events, meeting the new Prags, and turning them into anarchists.
Yeah. Dude, I think that's why the hard anti-Mises action like goes straight to Naziville, because that's what you have to, at this point, that's what they have to do. This is a Hail Mary. It's so dishonest. It's so gross what they're doing. And honestly, anybody who uses that term seriously, alt-right in 2021, you got a fucking problem, man.
I don't know what it means anymore. Yeah. Star Wars says I'm a terrorist. I don't know what it means anymore.
Yeah. Is it Ben Shapiro? Like what the fuck is alt-right? Is it not
Tucker Carlson?
Yeah, come on. If it is, I don't know. That guy's all right. Like, he's not a libertarian, but like, he's not, you know, not Rachel Maddow. There's something a little bit better about that guy. I don't know. We can use some nuance here. It's like, but yeah.
No, I mean, we should have a litmus test, and the litmus test should be, do you think January 6th should be a national holiday?
Right. Yeah, man. If that's your big rallying cry, oh my God, that the fascists are taking over January 6th. You can't work here. I'm sorry. I'm going to work hard to make sure you can't work here because you're a nerd and probably dishonest.
Oh, she's going to lose him. I keep asking everybody who's better at organizing stuff than me, because I'm terrible at follow through and actually putting stuff together. I'm an ideas kind of a guy, and I know that's a negative thing in business. I'm putting myself down when I say I'm an ideas guy. I have great ideas. I never follow through on them. I keep trying to find somebody who will take my idea and run and organize an open carry rally at the New Hampshire State House on January 6th.
Ooh. That's really soon. You could better get to it.
Well, here's one of the a unique thing about New Hampshire. Open carry is perfectly legal. You don't need no license. The state house is open. They're going to be in session, so the legislators will be in the house. It's going to be like a Tuesday afternoon or some shit. And so they'll be in there voting. You are allowed. There is no security that keeps people out of the state house on house days in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. There's like one security guard. His job is to tell you directions on how to get to what room you're looking for and stay at the door. And you're allowed to carry guns in the state house.
So, yeah, you're all good, man.
Right, but I want to get a photo op of like 100 libertarians marching into the state house with guns on January 6th.
That would be big cheese. Yeah, I would definitely applaud you on that one.
Or if we can get enough snow, we've had this plan for a few years. We've just never had enough snow because people think New Hampshire winters are awful, but we haven't had enough snow to build an igloo.
Yeah, you guys get a bad rep for that. Like, oh, I would move there, except it's snow.
Yeah, listen, if the only thing keeping you separated from liberty in your lifetime is a jacket, you have bigger problems.
Good call. You guys are going really well. Not you, not all New Hampshire, but the Free State is going hard on like, what the fuck is everybody else doing if you're not moving here? I do love that. they go hard.
It's an honest question though. It's like, what are you doing if you're not moving here?
Well, I honestly, we can go into that if you want to, yeah. But I think the idea that the Free State project should probably try and come up with some little pockets of little mini Free State franchises that would probably be good, because we can't just have one place where everybody has to go, man. We can't have, the rule can't be decentralize everything except where you put all the libertarians. You know what I mean? It's not logistical.
Here's the thing. It's like, I've come to the realization in my libertarian activism, and I used to be the guy that believed you could convince people of libertarianism, that you could sell people on libertarian ideas. I wrote a book on how to do it. I don't think you can.
I'm kind of with you. I get it. Yeah.
I don't think we can convince people of something that goes fundamentally against their core principles. And a lot of these people that we're trying to convince, their core principles are statism in one form or fashion. Yeah. And whether that's statist conservatism or statist leftism, like it inherently revolves around the outsourcing of responsibility. And that's what people are afraid of. And that's one of the hardest things to sell somebody, is that you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, absolutely. What do I get out of it? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. It's probably harder than the life you're living right now. And you're right. You hit it on the head. Like, everything we do is by proxy. From the time we get up, fucking, you know, you're entertained, you're whatever, you got all the things delivered to your house, you got people to clean your house, or you got like people to raise your kids, state raises your kids, like everything is just done by people are just spectators in life, kind of. And yeah, you're right. If like all of a sudden you realize that and you're like, oh no, you have to do all this stuff for yourself, people are gonna be like, nope.
Yeah. And it's and I point out to people, like, so assuming that like 1% of the population is libertarian, let's go like high, let's go real optimistic here. 5% of the population is receptive to libertarian ideas and libertarian philosophy. If even 20% of them move to New Hampshire, it's 100,000 people. We got 5,000 now, and we've taken over the state house. Imagine what we could do with 20,000.
Wow, is there only 5,000 Free Staters? I thought that you guys Movers. Must have had. I thought you must have had way more than that for the success that you've had, which is really great. Yeah.
Well, the thing about the reason New Hampshire was picked, like the state motto is "Live Free or Die."
Right.
There's only ever been one controversy about the state motto, and it was a religious couple sued the state over whether or not they could cover up "Live Free or Die" on their license plate because it went against their religion. Wow. And the state didn't even fight it. The state's like, yeah, let's put duct tape over it. We don't care.
Sure, go ahead. That's awesome.
But, like, even before libertarians started taking over New Hampshire had a huge libertarian bent.
Yeah.
Like, you look at predating the Free State Project. 2001 is when the project started. We didn't trigger the move till a few years ago and get everyone starting to move. But up until 2001, there had been, like, 11 libertarians elected to state legislatures in the country. In any state, 11 total. One in Alaska, one in Vermont, 9 in New Hampshire.
Yeah, you got the culture.
They were just winning here already before Free Staters started moving.
Yeah.
And to the license plate thing, one of these things, I'm still learning. I've been here years, and I'm still learning every day weird shit that makes New Hampshire great. I saw somebody driving on the road with a license plate that was just a piece of cardboard that said "Live Free or Dry" and had numbers scribbled on it. I took a picture and sent it to a friend. I'm like, this is the anarchy I love. He's like, no, that's a legal license plate. I'm like, what? And I went and looked it up. That Sovereign is a perfectly citizen. Legal license plate in New Hampshire. If you just put a piece of, as long as it has the registration number and says "Live Free or Die," it's a license plate.
Wow. So yeah, that's funny that you have to write that on it, but that lady could cover it up with tape.
Right.
As long as you give me that number and that slogan, you're good.
Right. And that's all that it takes to be cool with the state is writing "Live Free or Die" on your car. And I've got an idea of how to push this. I think we're going to push this a little bit farther. I think we're going to get a van and just paint the sides "Live Free or Die" and not register it. See how much we can push, see how far bit. We can get away with it.
But yeah. Good idea.
Just for fun. But no, it's, And the other thing is, like, I don't think there's enough libertarians for your little pockets of resistance elsewhere. Because look
at the idea, though. Is that the idea, though, that it would be a resistance pocket, or is it just a place where,
like, it would turn into a resistance pocket real quick when you start libertarianing up a little town and the state just drops the hammer on you?
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I know I'm trying. Not that I have a whole lot of faith, but, you know, Delaware's only got three little counties. It's just this little thing hanging off Philadelphia. So, like, the culture here is very independent minded too. Not probably what you have going on up there, but we also don't have all that land to cover and all those minds to change. You know, it's very homogenous. Like, the culture here is, it's pretty much the same. Fairly rural, except for the one little city up the top. But
as long as you're registered as a corporation.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. This is the Cayman Islands of the U.S., baby. You can hide all your money here. It's where Joe Biden planted his roots. So
maybe Delaware might be different, but I still think, you know, nah, never mind. Joe Biden came from Delaware.
Yeah. It's a cesspool.
Like, it can't be that free of a culture. They gave us Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah. We gave you, you know, Chase Bank and Bank of America and, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those are the
Watching an interview. It was some late night show. I don't remember who the hell it was, but Aubrey Plaza was the guest. And they asked her, like, did you know you were recently voted the most famous person from Delaware? And she just laughed. She's like, yeah, Joe Biden's from Delaware.
Yeah, she's great. She's way better than Joe Biden.
Right. But, like, that's how little anybody knows. Delaware does not exist was actually trending for a while.
Oh, yeah, dude. People think it's part of Pennsylvania. Or, you know, a city in Ohio, which it is too, but it's also this state that we live in. It's like
it's a corporate mail drop for the United States.
Yeah, definitely drive through territory for New Yorkers that are heading to the beach. Yeah, it's all those things.
No, but I mean, back to your little idea. It's like, if you think consolidating libertarians in small areas, like outside of New Hampshire, is a good idea, why wouldn't you consolidate them all in New Hampshire?
I just think it's a big ask. Like, people, I've traveled the country, I've traveled the world. I would move again, but most people stay where they grew up and they stay where their family and their friends are. So I think it's just a big ask. And
I get that. I used to criticize the Free State Project myself on that very thing. It's a big ask. I did not move to New Hampshire for the Free State Project. I did not move to New Hampshire for I moved to New Hampshire because of politics, but not for politics. I had a minor disagreement with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts over some firearms that I had owned that they had an issue with. Mm-hmm. And I chose to run away from a warrant by moving 2 minutes north. But
that's a really good reason to move to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Super easy. It didn't really affect your life too much. It's like, what the fuck am I doing over here?
Yeah. I kept my job. Like, I didn't have to do anything. But I used to criticize the Free State Project because I said, here's the problem. Like, libertarians are already a fringe ideology. Fringe ideologies attract fringe people. One of the problems with being the counterculture is that you don't just attract people who reject mainstream culture. You also inherently attract people who are rejected by mainstream culture. And there's a reason they were rejected for it. Because of their inability to form lasting relationships, their inability to communicate interpersonally. The joke about autism and Asperger's being a inherent trait of libertarians isn't far off from an observational reality when you get large groups of libertarians together. And the ones that are going to pick up and move for a political ideology are going to be the ones who have nothing tying them to where they are, who don't have families, who don't have a stable career, who don't have a future that they've built there, because they have nothing to lose there. And if they have nothing to lose there, they also have nothing to lose here. And so you're going to get the worst of the liberty movement to move. And for a long time, I will still argue that that was true. We had the worst of libertarians from around the world moving to New Hampshire. We had people who lived off of welfare and were full-time activists because they couldn't hold down a job.
You're not doing it right. Yeah, that's not good.
Representing libertarianism for a while. But things have gotten better over time as the Free State Project has matured. The communities have been built around it. We've got such a thriving community of libertarians here that people settle, are welcomed, have infrastructure and community support network to help them get on their feet here that from happening again. And in the past 2 years, we've seen something staggeringly shocking to me. families are moving. People are getting so sick of where they are because government and COVID regulations have overcome their desire to stay close to their roots.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too. You're right about that. I believe it.
So I don't think it's as big of an ask now as it was 5 years ago.
No, that's a good point. You're right. Like it's more appealing now. Like you got a better case if you're trying to sell it. Like, your family is probably safer here than Delaware, sir. Would you like to maybe take that for a test drive? Yeah.
No, you're right. The Free State Project, they definitely do go hard. Like, no, you're doing it wrong if you're not in New Hampshire. I had Larry Sharp on last week, and the first comment I got from people in the FSB is like, did you ask him why he's not moving to New Hampshire?
Because he's going to save New York, yo.
No, and I think we actually came to a conclusion after the debate. I think Larry Sharp being in New York is better for the Free State Project than Larry Sharp being in New Hampshire would be for Larry Sharp.
Yeah, I think they need somebody right there to – I think I've heard him say, like, yo, even though this city has fallen, it's like, well, somebody needs to be here to speak up for it.
Well, and that not only that, everything he does to speak up for libertarianism, everything he does to do outreach and grow the liberty movement in New York, and every five new people he introduces to libertarianism, one of them's like, oh, that's right. Fuck this shit. I'm moving to New Hampshire.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, like an entryway. Like, oh, come on in. Let me tell you about this. And right up north, you could get out of this. Go ahead. Let me direct you there. Yeah.
He doesn't even tell them that. They just go down the rabbit hole. And it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
So we used to joke.
He's a great communicator.
We used to joke up here that the one true purpose of the Libertarian Party was to funnel people who actually wanted to do the work to New Hampshire. And then they sent us Nick Sarwark.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he followed. He jumps around, man. He's been Arizona and Maryland and Colorado and New Hampshire and, where the wind blows, that guy goes.
Yeah, wherever he thinks he'll be relevant in a big fish.
Yeah, but the last thing he did, he was noted right in your neighborhood, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. He still speaks with such confidence that,
it wasn't even Mises Caucus that noted him.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. That's definitely the effect of the caucus, though. I mean, this guy was a really popular chair 4 years ago. And
so here's the thing. He was a really popular chair. Everywhere else he's been a big fish. He's been like, I was the chair of the Libertarian Party, blah, 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 blah. And all the local libertarians like, oh, wow, he was the chair of the party. How cool is that? And giving him all sorts of leeway and help and giving him the throne before earning it to sit on, and treated him with deference and respect. He shows up to New Hampshire. He's like, I was the chair of the Libertarian Party. Like, so fucking what? I testified before five committees last week, and I've got two bills in legislative review right now. What have you done?
Yeah. You're in New Hampshire now, bro. So this is not your little pond anymore. Yeah.
Right. And the moment he realized, it took him a bit to realize, I think, because he came to visit a Pork Fest and he was a speaker at Pork Fest and everyone was like, oh, you're great. You're awesome. You're doing good work. Went home, told his wife, we're moving to New Hampshire. Moved within a couple months of that Pork Fest was in New Hampshire.
Wow. Did he get a standing ovation or something? He's like, babe, this is our place.
Yeah. And they get here and then immediately people are like, all right, so what are you going to do? He's like, I'm going to help with the Libertarian Party. He's like, and it was like, why? The Libertarian Party in New Hampshire, that's even their second priority. We're winning over here. What are you going to do to help us win? Well, I'm going to grow the Libertarian Party and get libertarians elected. It's like, we have 80 libertarians in the state house. Those are Republicans. I'm like, they're members of the LP. They paid dues.
Yeah, I've had questions about how that relationship works because you do have so many dynamics. You got lowercase L libertarians elected all throughout the state house, but you got a strong Libertarian Party and a great Mises Caucus and the Free State Project. And I'm thinking my boy Tho Bishop is you only got so many resources. So it's how do you kind of manage that? Is there a poll? No, don't join that. Join this. No, don't go over here.
Just join all of this. So are you familiar with Swarmwise and Eric Falkvinge?
No.
Eric Falkvinge, once upon a time, went on a little internet message board and was bitching and complaining about the European Union's IP laws and piracy laws and anti-piracy laws. And he got like 20 people on this message board online into such a tizzy about wanting to abolish IP laws and make it easier to share and seed information and share with each other over the internet that they decided to form a political party whose single platform piece was abolishing IP laws. They formed the Icelandic Pirate Party. And in 3 years, they went from being 20 angry dudes on the internet to the third largest political party in Europe in having 20% of the seats in the European Parliament.
What? When? What year was this?
This is back in the early 2000s.
Okay, this is pre-meme culture. I'm like, how did this even fucking happen? This is amazing.
And Fallon Finch wrote a book on it called Swarmwise, and it's absolutely incredible. And he breaks down, it's like a leaderless revolution, how a leaderless revolution can change the world. And I think what's holding libertarians back is our focus on structures and hierarchies, because we're a bunch of anarchists who are trying to boss people around, rather than what we do here in New Hampshire is just completely decentralized. You figure out what you want to do and do it. If you can get three other people who think what you want to do is a good idea, get them to help you do it. And we're not going to stop you. We're going to go work on something else. And eventually you're going to have all these little cells and groups of people working on things that they think are good ideas. And the ones that are having the most impact are going to start rising to the top, and people are going to join and help them. And then they're going to need cells to break off from them to do the ancillary things. So like the Free State Project started because Jason Sorens wrote a paper and published it on a message board, and people got excited and just did a thing.
Yeah.
The New Hampshire Liberty Alliance started because a couple of people wanted to start reviewing bills and making recommendations about what was pro-liberty and what was anti-liberty. And they just did it. And now it's a major lobbyist organization in New Hampshire. The Libertarian Party of New Hampshire, for a long time, up until the early 2000s, was very, very active in actually lobbying legislation, writing legislation, developing relationships with the courts and state legislators to get stuff done while getting people elected as libertarians. And the Republican Liberty Caucus did its own thing. But when you combine everyone doing their own thing, and the slight overlap that's there where there's a couple Republican Liberty Caucus members who are dues-paying and lifetime members of the Libertarian Party and come and ask libertarians for advice on Republican legislation, everything works together in perfect harmony because that's people
really cool.
care more about it succeeding than who gets the credit.
Yeah, you have enough of a liberty culture to where at least you don't have Republicans stabbing libertarians in the back.
They try. Yes. Chris Sununu tries.
Yeah.
And
you got that guy. That's right.
And here's the crazy thing. I would wager there's probably only about 45 actual free staters in the state house right now, which is only about 10%. We have a 400-person state legislature. About 10% of them are free staters. But it's like a 50-50 legislature. So that 10% became a swing vote.
Yeah.
And that swing vote built the whole Republican Liberty Caucus around it. And now there's 80 to 100 other state reps who are taking their cues from the free staters.
Yeah, that really should be the model. Like, even if you don't have to move to New Hampshire, but like, look at what you guys are doing. Yeah. And copy that.
And you have people like Nick Sarwark, like, well, it's not the same if they didn't get elected as a libertarian. And I say, all right, let's point this out. Michael Yakubovich. Michael Yakubovich moved to New Hampshire for the Free State Project. He was a lifelong member of the Libertarian Party after moving as a refugee from Soviet Russia. Comes to New Hampshire, becomes a Republican, gets elected. One of the first things he did this term was he called me and asked me to help him write legislation. I'm not a Republican, but he respects me on certain issues and wants me to help him write libertarian legislation. So me, by not even registering as a Republican, not even running as a Republican, just simply not being an asshole to them, have more of an impact in the state house than Nick Sarwark does.
Yeah, and that's obvious because you too, like any good libertarian, lowercase or uppercase, you're more concerned with the results than the party and your principle than the party, which Nick is not. He has declared that. So I'm concerned with the party and growing this party and getting votes for this party. So, yeah, that's what you would get out of him, of course.
So, and I feel like when he moved to New Hampshire, he under his expectation to be treated the same he's been treated everywhere else, where when he moved, instead of treating him like the king and like this high and mighty guy, everyone just treated him as just another mover, just another neighbor, just another person to be friends with. And he immediately started treating people like shit because he wasn't receiving the high and mighty treatment he'd grown used to.
Oh, man, he never got that from me. I've known that who that guy was for 4 years, and I was introduced to him because Mike Heiss called when he started this caucus. I was like, have you heard of this guy? I'm like, no. He's like, well, he's running a Libertarian Party. You should know who he is if you're calling yourself a Libertarian. I'm like, all right, that's a fair point. And
why? Yeah, why should you? No, I actually think that's the problem. And I think that's the problem in approach and the problem in focus for the Mises caucus as a whole and people like Heiss. Everyone is so hyper-focused on who's holding the reins as opposed to the process of what's being done. I actually care less about the LNC and its bullshit drama and what they do than I do about candidates and their messaging and affiliates and their messaging. Do you know who the chair of the DNC is?
I knew the last guy. What was his name?
Tom Perez?
Yeah.
Okay, go ask go ask 10 random Democrats, and I guarantee you, one out of 10 of them in one out of 10 times will know who he was.
Well, no, I agree with you that it would be cooler if we didn't have to know them, but as long as they're doing what they're doing, like my thought process was in 2016 before I ever heard of Nick Sarwark or, you know, looked much into the party. I just assumed that, well, it's a Libertarian Party, so they're probably all moral and pretty decent people who are just working really hard towards the things that I find important. So until I found out who some of these people were and they were doing the opposite of that, it was so startling. So again, you know, in the beginning of the show, we were talking about some of these people who are getting paid who shouldn't be here. Like, this is like, I don't want to be focused on this stuff. And you're right. It is a waste of time. There's other things that we should be doing. In fact, there's microcosms, dude. Like the stuff in Delaware we're doing right now. I haven't even done one of my own podcasts in like 2 months because I'm so deep into this shit right now, but it's really important that we handle it now, so that we can focus on real stuff, like real libertarian issues in our state and nationwide and whatever. But I can't do it until my house is in order. You know what I mean? So like the same can be said with the national. It's like, we can't do shit until our house is in order. People still don't take us seriously. And there's reasons for that. There's names to put on that. And Nick is one of them.
I don't think people are going to take the Libertarian Party seriously for a long time. And I don't
agreed. Think, you're right.
I don't think Nick is going to be even a footnote in that story.
I hope so. I hope you're right. But
when I talk to non-libertarians about why they don't like the Libertarian Party and what their negative perception of the Libertarian Party is, no one's ever brought up Nick Sarwark.
Oh, no. No, you're right.
They bring up Vermin Supreme.
Yep.
They bring up James Weeks. They bring up Bill Weld. Yep. And they bring up Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
And some of the more like archaic Liberty Republican
all of those
types,
figures that were supported and they were all supported and nurtured by Nick Sarwark and guys like that, though, because he puts on like a kind of front, like the business professional front. But he's a fakertarian, bro. He loves those guys. They're all pals. They share emails. They collude together to try and squash the caucus. And, you know, they're the same thing. He's just got a nice little polish on him.
So here's one compliment I will give Nick Sarwark. In the years I've worked with him on the LNC and on other projects that I've worked with him on, he's a manipulative asshole. He's definitely an authoritarian kind of manager, but he is very smart. Mm-hmm. He is very competent. I will never say he is not good at what he does. And one of the whole reasons I tried to tell people I didn't think he was involved in the New Hampshire coup was because of how poorly planned it was. And I didn't believe that he could display that level of incompetence. Since then, I've reread Gilletta's letter, and she's used verbiage in her letter that was ripped directly out of a JC decision that Nick Sarwark wrote in the past. So maybe he might have given some advice, but I don't think he was involved still. But Spike Cohen actually made a joke and an argument to me once where he's like, I don't know. I think Nick might secretly be pro Mises caucus.
Because it's so bad.
And I think that Nick might be trying to play Pied Piper with some grand master plan. I don't know what his end goal is. I don't know what his path or his plan is. But it seems like he just latched on to the fact that they hated him. And he figured out that he could manipulate them into doing stuff if he just pushed their buttons.
Like what? What do you think he's gotten them to do?
Double the size of the party and recruit new members?
Yeah, but they're all people that he hates. That's the
thing. Does he put up an active facade?
This is a great conspiracy theory, by the way. I'm down with this one. He's a closeted meacock.
Does he actually hate them, or is he just running with the fact that they hate him?
Right. Are you a political football for us that we get to kick around while we build this thing up? That would be cool.
The memoirs are going to come out in 20 years, and we're like, God damn it, he got us.
I don't know, man. I could subscribe to a lot. I don't think we ever went to the moon, but damn. I still think he's a legitimate asshole.
I'm not saying he's not a legitimate asshole. He's one of the biggest assholes I've ever met.
I think he works hard to crush the Mises Caucus. But yeah, unless there's a big pendulum thing there that I'm missing or whatever, if you know, maybe it could be.
Right. I find it hilarious. Like Spike laid out his case to it. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Spike is a brilliant dude, man. Wouldn't put it past him.
Like that makes a lot of sense. And it's terrifying at the same time.
Yep. He's not colluding with anybody that I know in the executive committee of the Mises Caucus. So,
well, here's the thing. Like, I asked him once why if he hated Josh Smith so much, why did he nominate Josh Smith for chair of the affiliate support committee and put him in that position? And his answer was, well, it was a win-win for me. Either he failed and he looked horrible, mm-hmm. or he succeeded and I looked smart for putting him in that position.
This is how, he is smart, and that is how a politician would think. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, they replaced Josh with Valerie Sarwark, who saw her own affiliate collapse while she was in charge of the affiliate support committee.
Yeah, and now she's getting bumped up to something, too. I saw that they just voted on. She's going to be...
The APRC. This one maybe people should be mad about. She just got voted on to the committee that reviews all the messaging for the Libertarian Party and decides what's appropriate and what's not.
This is fucking crazy to me. That's why I'm here, because I don't want to know the people on the LNC, but as long as this shit is going like this, then I have to know their names. I have to look at their fucking messages and I have to yell at them on Twitter.
Well, here's my challenge to you then. Take a page out of New Hampshire's book. Take a page out of Dan Smonson's book. Take a page out of the book of the people who've said, fuck it. They don't care anymore. The LNC doesn't speak for them. They don't care. We reclaim the word libertarian by being stronger with your messaging than the LNC can be and being more upfront and more bold with it and being more present with it. Like, the LNC wouldn't say shit about lockdowns, so we put up a fucking billboard in New Hampshire that made national headlines.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome.
The LNC said they wanted to fundraise $100,000 to run an ad. They only got 30 and put together a crap ad. Dan Smonts, in his spare time for free, put together an incredible 2-minute reel that I played before every show.
Yeah. But here's the kicker. And I've talked with Dan about this. Like, it'd be one thing if they were like, oh no, we've never heard of Dan Smonts. Like, we just did the best we could. But it's like, no, you know exactly who he is. He has reached out to you. Spike Cohen has reached out to you on behalf of him. We have showed you his material and you could have had it, but you chose not to. Because
here's how great Dan Smonson's material is. He's not even in New Hampshire. He's not even a Free Stater. He hasn't moved yet. We're still going to pay him to do promo ads for the Free State Project.
Awesome. Yeah, everybody should give him their money to promote stuff because, we need to have slick packaging like that. Yeah.
So I got in an argument with one of the LNC staffers on a Twitter thread in the LNC business group. Where they were going on about how great the comms director is and how awesome the comms director is. And I'm like, bullshit. Fuck you. No. Let's actually break this down. And I went through, I went to Dan's tweet. None of the reposts, none of them, just Dan's tweet with the video, the original video. And I took Dan's number of followers and the number of views that video had and the number of shares that video had and figured out his actual per impression ratio of the video and how well it did. And then I went to the LNC's page and their per impression video. Dan's was not only higher, it was an order of magnitude higher. He had over 1,000 times the reach per follow that the LP did on their video. And then I said, okay, now let's break this down by cost. And the LP for $30,000 to produce and advertise that video, they got 7 new members out of it. They got 7 new members that they could track from that video as their conversions. I'm like, those members will have to be members for 60 years apiece to pay off the video that made them become members.
Right. This is not fiscally conservative. No. Shit, bro.
I don't know how many members did the Mises Caucus get out of Dan's video. I don't know, but more than seven, I'm sure.
Yeah. Again, yeah, follow the money. The Mises Caucus is taking in a lot of money because they are putting up what people want to see. And at the end of the day, that's what it is, man.
The thing is, like, I've always been anti-caucus. Ever since I got kicked out of the Radical Caucus, I've refused to join another caucus.
Ever since they kicked me out, I'm like, fuck caucuses.
Yeah. So like they it. Well, they kicked me out and they did a whole bunch of stink about excommunicating me and Karen Ann when me and Karen Ann voted to suspend Arvind Vora from the LNC because of his messaging on the LNC platform was a poor reflection of libertarians. And here's the crazy part. I say crazier shit from my personal profile every day than Arvind ever did from the LNC page. But I'm not representing an organization with a fiduciary duty to its donors. I can't tweet Timothy McVeigh did nothing wrong from the LP page. I can tweet that just to see what the fuck will happen from my own page because I'm curious, but I can't tweet it from the LP page. Just like Arvind Vora shouldn't have posted as Arvind Vora, LNC vice chair, school teachers should be shot. I don't think he's wrong in a lot of cases. But you can't post that from the page. So we voted to suspend him, and the Radical Caucus is like, oh, you're censoring free speech. It was Susan Hogarth, actually. She was the chair of the Radical Caucus at the time, who tried to have me and Karen Ann censured and removed from the caucus. I'm like, fine, fuck you. Never joined a caucus since. Like, I was endorsed by the Prags. I was endorsed by the later version of the Radical Caucus, but I would never actually join a caucus. And even when I started becoming friendly with the Mises Caucus people, they come, are you joining the caucus? I'm like, fuck no. I'm like, you helped us organize the whole convention. Like you're the one. I went to a Mises Caucus meetup and taught them parliamentary procedure so they could take over New Hampshire. And they're like, why don't you join the caucus? I'm like, I fucking hate caucuses. Then the takeover happened. And the first thing I did was I went to the Mises Caucus page. I sent $25. I got a receipt. I screenshotted it and I texted it to Joe Bishop Henchman. Both him and his husband blocked me within 5 minutes.
Oh my God. Was he still chair at the time? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. See, you have to be impartial as a chair. That guy already blew it.
I screenshotted the receipt for you sent $25 to the LP Mises Caucus, and I texted it to Joe Bishop Henchman with a comment that just said, you did this.
Yeah, you're damn right. And they still, as the body, the LNC has still not apologized or repudiated the actions of the disgraced former chair. So as far as I'm concerned, they're still in this state of limbo where they know that they're wrong and they're going to just cover their tracks until the wheels fall off. They're never going to do anything good. That was awful. I can't believe we never got a formal.
Honestly, as someone in New Hampshire, I'd love for them to just move past it and forget it ever happened. Because we won't forget. Like we won't forget. We won't let anyone here forget.
Well, I agree with you, and that's cool of you guys, but like, and it's the same for, we both have kind of similar situations, but I think that your situation and ours, even though like it affects us personally because we live here,
right?
This affects the whole party and everything moving forward. And like, that's why I was trying to make everybody care about what was going on in Delaware, because if they set precedent with this, then this is just going to be the way that they move forward. And they basically just dog whistled. The LNC just dog whistled to every other fakertarian in the whole country. You know, just lie, cheat, steal, whatever you got to do to like squash these people. And we'll just kind of cover your tracks. Like that's what it felt like. They did a sloppier job up in New Hampshire and Karen Ann was pretty on that. And you guys, you know, you handled it. But Will is a unique one, man, down here. He's real bad.
Hey, tell you what. Will might be like not a libertarian and he might like hate the Mises Caucus as much as he did, but he had one post in the heat of it all. There's one post I saw, and I'm not in any of the Delaware groups. This is like a screenshot and shared around. And I saw it. I'm like, he makes a really, really good point here and a really good argument. And it was the most Hoppian thing I've ever read.
Did he say that this is ours and we can freely associate with whoever we want?
Yeah, and like the democracy is bad and democracy leaves organizations vulnerable to outside influence and takeover attempts. I'm like, he's not wrong.
Yeah, pretty based.
like, why doesn't he do that more often? Like, that's mind blowing. Like, I saw that coming from him. I'm like,
But this is also a guy who loves, thrives in bureaucracy. He loves the shitty bylaws that he and his people wrote over the last 10 years that he could manipulate.
Dude, that's so fucking awful.
Dude, it's awful. I got to tell you this, though. It was a Christmas miracle this year, dude. We had a Mises Caucus dinner with like 40 people at a big table. And Will's dad was one of them. He came over, had Christmas dinner with us. And I hugged him. I was just like, this is crazy. Like, you know, we're here talking, having a good time. And, you know, it's absolutely tragic what this Will has done to his family over this, beyond what he's done to the party. But like, his dad's a great man. And
watching his dad shit talk him in Facebook threads has been hilarious.
It's been great. That's why. And he's so like, you know, I hate to laugh, but yeah, some of it has been funny. But he's a really good dude, and he's a registered libertarian, and he doesn't want to see this happen in the party. He's like, dude, talk about principles over everything else. Like, his principles have caused him to be like, son, you're fucking up. This is like some, yeah, some fucking, I don't know, some epic shit.
Tell him he can have his Mandalorian party. Actually, somebody should go start the Jedi party.
Right? You know what he did? Will is, like I said, he thrives in this, the minutia of the legalities and Delaware election laws, and he started himself another party. This is the third one. He started a Mises party, which I imagine he's going to use to discredit anything that has Mises attached to it. But yeah, that's now on the ballot. When you go to the DMV to like register for shit, it'll say the Bacon Party that he registered like 5 or 6 years ago, and the Mandalorian Party, which he'd registered in June because the MAGA caucus has taken over the Libertarian Party, and now the Mises Party. Like, they probably know him by face and name at this point.
So, again, I'm going to give George Phillies a little bit of credit here, too. And I'm wildly unfamiliar with Delaware election law. I know it's literally zero about it, but I know Massachusetts and New Hampshire election law like the back of my hand. In Massachusetts, once you're a major party, you can register a minor party just by going to the Secretary of State and say, I'm creating a party, just like that, and people can register over. Once you get enough registered voters, you become a major party. And a major party has to follow certain rules, and the state comes in, and registered voters can override the person who started the party once they're a part of it. And that's one of the things George Phillies has always been afraid of, why he doesn't want ballot access in Massachusetts, because he's afraid that Massachusetts Republicans will just try and co-opt it for the fusion line.
Yeah.
Which, power to them. If they can, it means you couldn't recruit. But people in Massachusetts have taken advantage of that. Like, there was this guy, Evan Falchuk. He wanted to run for governor, but didn't want to spend the money to get 10,000 signatures to run for governor. So he went to the Secretary of State, and there was no independent party. There's an unenrolled designation, but there's no independent designation. So he filed for a party called the Independent Party.
Dude, Delaware did that too. And they popped up. They beat the Libertarian Party, because people, you go to the DMV, right, you think you're registering for independent. They're the third largest party in the state.
Right.
Because that's what people want, independence.
Independent became the second largest party in Massachusetts inside a year.
Shit. That's crazy.
Massachusetts, I think it's the only state in the country where they have a majority, not a plurality, an actual majority of voters are unenrolled, not a member of a party. So when people were going to vote, everyone's like, unenrolled, 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 because they also have open primaries. And everyone checked independent, and it blew past the Republican Party. And then he got to put himself on the ballot for governor for free. But the next year, they had to have elections for a state committee. Mm-hmm. And it got taken over by a bunch of socialists.
See. Yeah. That's how they do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to learn those state election rules. Yeah.
So it'd be great if you guys could just go take over the Mises Party.
Yeah. Right. But no, man, look, you said something earlier about, you know, attracting professionals into this, and we kind of promote people that maybe they're not the most qualified. I probably put myself in that. I'm not the most qualified for this. In fact, I don't thrive in Robert's rules and the bylaws. That's not my shit. I have really great people that do. But my goal now is to do this dirty work, to clean the house, to get his legacy out for good, so that we can have a fertile, you know, ground here where professionals can come in. I can retire. Or just down to like voting member, you know what I mean? I don't need to be the chair of Newcastle County. I would rather somebody come in and challenge me who is awesome.
I understand that entirely. And to me, honestly, the best part of the Mises takeover in New Hampshire was that I got to step back. Because, like, even some of, like, Dennis Pratt, who I'm sure you've read something he's written because he's the most prolific contemporary libertarian author on Quora. The man's published over, like, 5 million words on Quora about libertarianism. And he can't comment on a Facebook thread without writing a novel. So
that's where I think I know from the most, yeah.
Yeah. But he had said something earlier, like, this week, and somebody asked, he's like, until the Mises takeover, I actually thought, he said he actually thought that the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire was just me and AJ Olding. He's like, I'd never heard it. I thought it was just those two, nobody else, because we were the only ones who ever did anything, ever ran anything. We were helping run the state committee. We ran the ballot drive. We were the candidates for office. Nobody else did a thing for 4 years. And then that was the whole thing, is like when Sean and Nolan and all the Mises Caucus guys started having events, we started going to the events, and like, you guys want to volunteer and help? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, really? That's new. I'm not used to that.
You are a gem, dude. I'll tell you what, I just wish everybody, I wish this was the kind of, like, you know, again, I don't give a fuck if anybody's in a caucus or not. I'm in this caucus because Mike is my boy. I'm a product of the Ron Paul revolution. So like, it just clicked, and like, I like the organization. I like that this has a chance to like make the party good, but that your way is the way, man. Like, you don't have to be in it. Just like, be accepting of new people that want to come in and want to work. Like, that's so easy.
Dude, you know, the state party, the New Hampshire state party. And we've had quite a few people rescind their memberships and quit over the Mises Caucus takeover. Yet we've still over doubled the membership.
Yeah, you should feel really good about that. You know, they can lie with statistics and say, oh, they're losing members. It's like, yeah, but they're getting a lot more.
Right. It's like, I think we were one of the only states that had an increase in the number of delegates we got for Reno.
We would have gotten one more this year when, I don't know how that's going to shake out Reno, but yeah, it would have went from 3 to 4 because we did some good recruiting too.
One of my long-term plans for here in New Hampshire is I want to try and convince all the free staters in 2024, before the next delegate allocation. Like, listen, there's like 5,000-6,000 of y'all. If each of you just throws $25 at the Libertarian Party for a membership, you can earmark it so it doesn't go to salary. It doesn't go to any of the committees you hate. You can strictly put it to like the Karen Ann's committee or whatever else. Mm-hmm. Like, if each of you throw $25, just join the party for a year, we'll have 5,000 LP members in New Hampshire. We'll have over 70 delegates. Like, there's enough libertarians in New Hampshire for us to have more members than California.
That's crazy. When do you think you could do that? How many?
I don't know if I can. It's hard because so many of the free staters are former Libertarian Party members.
Yeah.
Who left the Libertarian Party over the past decade for one reason or another.
I know why they left the Libertarian Party over the last decade or so. I get it. I totally fucking get it. That's why I feel like, man, I always feel like I'm in between like a guy like Tho Bishop and a guy like John Hudak. You know what I mean? Like, both of you stay the fuck over there while I do this thing with my squad and we'll tell you when it's ready to go. You know what I mean? But I don't know.
I got in an argument with Tho when I pissed off all of Mises' Twitter a few weeks ago because I said mean things about Ron Paul.
I fucking forgot about that until right now, you son of a bitch.
We talked about it in Boston, all right?
Yeah, I'm just playing with you, bro.
Like, I'm not a fan of Ron Paul. I never have been. I've never been a Ron Paul fanboy. It wasn't the Ron Paul revolution that brought me into the Libertarian Party. I distinctly remember the Republican presidential debate in 2012, watching Romney, Gary Johnson, Ron Paul, and I forget who the fuck else was up there. I only remember those three. But there was an exchange about ending the drug war. And Gary Johnson goes on a rant. He's like, we need to end the drug war. We need to legalize marijuana and stop punishing victimless crimes of possession. And Ron Paul's like, yeah, and heroin too. I'm like, that's fucking crazy. I'm going to vote for this guy. He's sane. And I voted for Gary Johnson. Like, at that point in time, I thought.
But in retrospect, can you go, oh no, wait, Ron Paul was way better than he was.
Right. Yeah. I've evolved over time, but like, it's not Ron that brought me in here. It's not Ron that influenced my, it's not even Ron who influenced my growth towards the radical anarchist I've become. A lot of that's been, I'm a weird one. I don't read that much. Most of the reading I've done has been lefty. anarchist libertarians like Konkin and Emma Goldman, not Rothbard. I tried to read Anatomy of the State. I got bored in the first chapter and put it down.
Oh my God. It's the only Rothbard I've ever read, and it fucking changed it all. Oh, dude, that's wow. Okay. I mean, you know, however you got here, I don't care. Because, we're on the same page, but that's crazy.
One of my problems, and I think because like early on in the formation of the Mises Caucus, I was tight with ICE. I wasn't a caucus member, but I was helping start the LNC crypto committee and to try and get the LNC and the Libertarian Party more on board with cryptocurrency and trying to capture that market before in 2016, when nobody knew what crypto was, we were trying to push the Libertarian Party to say, this is going to be a big thing. It's going to change the world and people are going to learn from it. We need to get it. And I said, and I was helping start that with Preston Smith, Josh Smith, and Mike Heiss.
The blockchain committee, that would have been lit at the last election. If we had that established, that would have been, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. And it is established. It's just died and done nothing because the LNC never wanted to do anything with it. It was an ad hoc committee that never got renewed. But then, like, later on that year, there was this whole big fucking debate and argument where people were talking about, like, inviting Ron Paul to the convention. And I was on the LNC at the time. And that was, like, what blew shit up when Mises people started attacking me for saying, I don't think we should invite Ron Paul to the convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a strike.
Well, my reasons were...
Sorry,
his $35,000 honorarium would blow the budget of the convention.
That's good sense. We
couldn't afford him.
I get it.
And as someone who, like, I vehemently hate the hero worship of, like, long past heroes, and that's not to take away from anything he's done, that's not to take away from the people he's brought into the movement or the impact that he's had, I think we should use our stage to promote the people who are going to be the next generation of leaders rather than the past generation of leaders.
Listen, because I'm only going to tell you this because I think that you're really cool, but I think that's a serious mistake. We got to cherish that guy while he's here. And we got to make the Libertarian Party the place that holds his legacy forever.
And
hashtag no hero worship. But
because the convention 2 years prior to that, we did invite him. And he said no.
Well, I mean, he's got a real long history with this party. And people like Carol Moore, who have been trying to keep him out for 30 years. And anybody who has any kind of conservative.
And George Phillips.
Yeah, dude. So, like, I mean, I get it, kind of the pushback. This guy was staying in fucking Holiday Inns and shit, sleeping on couches and shit in 1987, 1988, trying to make this work. So just, I mean, I would say you don't have to come into the movement because of him. And but what a quest this guy has been on to deliver this gospel for so long. I think that the GOP is not going to have a home, is not going to be, like, the place to learn about Ron Paul. So where is that going to be? I hope that it's the Libertarian Party. And I hope that we have more, not idols, but I hope we have more champions come out. I think Spike Cohen is the best thing to come out of the LP in 20 years.
Well, that was, I think that's what I said to piss off Dave Smith. Is Dave was mad at how I said what I said, not what I said. But then later he told me, he was like, because I responded to him like, nah, I don't think Ron Paul is the Libertarian messenger for the future. Like, I think he's the Libertarian messenger for the past. And I think a lot of people are here because of him. But the people of the future aren't going to be here because of him. They're going to be here because of you and Spike and Tom.
I agree with Sharp. That, but all those guys, well, with the exception of maybe Larry, who came in with Gary Johnson, Gary and Larry, they all came in with Ron Paul. Like, or they were all, that was their kind of kickoff.
Right. And I get why it upset them and why I triggered them when I said what I said.
Well, screw upsetting them, though. I just mean, like, for the future. Like, Ron, you're right. He's not going to be here forever. He's in his 80s. But I'm saying that it's important. How old are you?
32.
All right. You're not, I mean, I'm 40. 41, I just turned. But I think it's important to, I mean, this is ancient shit, but you respect your elders and the guys that have, like, the top of the totem pole, you shut up and listen more than you speak to them. I think that goes a long way, man. So, you know, when a guy like even Dave Smith, he's the coolest guy in the movement right now. Nobody, he's got the biggest podcast in the world in our space. But if Ron Paul's talking, he's listening. So, like, if Dave Smith is the guy and he's looking at the guy, I mean, I don't know, man. Ron Paul is I don't like hero worship either, but I definitely I think teachers are important, and that guy unlocked a lot of shit for me personally. I know a lot of other people. Sure. It's good to have something to touch down, like a.
But that whole argument that day started because I was getting an argument with some Yale kid. Over, he said some fucking stupid ass fucking take about saying cops are good. Libertarians don't want to abolish the police. Libertarians want to fund the police and treat them better. And I'm like, that's not fucking true. I'm like, abolishing the state, abolishing the system of power by which the state hierarchies abuse people is a fundamental tenet of anarchy and libertarianism. He's like, that's not what Ron Paul says. I'm like, do explain. And he just kept coming back to Ron Paul says so. Never actually explained any Ron Paul's point. It was just Ron Paul said so. And so I was attacking him like, your hero worship is debilitating. You are unable to make a point. All you can do is parrot the fact that somebody else said something without arguing the principle behind what they said. And he responded by sending me a video that I felt bad for Ron Paul in the video because he looked like he was incoherent and mumbling agreement when the other guy in the video said abolishing police isn't a libertarian opinion. And Ron Paul's like, yeah, I agree. I'm like, he's not making an argument. He's not coherent. He's an old man who's being talked around and agreeing with something somebody else said out of habit.
Well, shit, man, I'd have to see that, but I just met him in September. I shook his hand and like told him that I hero worship him all the time. But no, but he was sharp as shit, dude. He gave a 45-minute speech, and he's like 80 something. I'm not sure, 80, 84 maybe. But like, yeah, he'll trip over his words. He still does the fucking Liberty Report like 5 days a week.
It was a video from the Liberty Report. It was somebody else talking and him mumbling in agreement.
I mean, yeah, he trips over his words a little bit because he's an old man. But I'm saying, like, for being that old, he's still pretty sharp and has a lot of wisdom to impart.
But so, he's also not immune from having a shit take.
Well, that kid definitely sounds like he's got some hero worship issues if he's just kept saying, that's what Ron Paul said. That's what Ron Paul said. I'm not going to sit here and go, that's what Ron Paul said. But yeah, he should have had a legitimate answer for you. But that's not Ron Paul's fault. That some fucking, you know, retard on the internet is going.
Right. And then I responded to him like, a senile old man isn't the arbiter of the liberty movement.
Oh, you're getting my blood boiling. The hero worship is getting to me.
In that video, Ron Paul came off like as less coherent than Joe Biden has been for the past year.
Stop it. We're off to such a great start.
And I don't watch the Liberty Report, so I'm not going to comment on the guy's day to day, but that video was the basis of the argument.
I mean, how long was it after his stroke? Guy just had a fucking stroke.
It was a recent video. Well, and that was one of my points. That was one of my points. But the guy just had a fucking stroke. Like, of course, he's not all fucking there anymore.
But he still got all the tools. If you sat down with him and you were like, okay, tell me about Jekyll Island, 1930. Tell me about that. He would fucking give you the whole spiel. He's not Joe Biden. What? Oh, come on, man. Poop my pants. He's not that. Like that.
Right. But like... The craziest part to me was like, this was like a no-name Yao kid who was in my mentions, who had like 17 followers on Twitter, and then it blew up to being the Liberty Twitter drama for the week.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man. Yeah, if I didn't know you a little bit, I mean, we hadn't met yet, but I wouldn't have loved that just coming across it. But I was like, I at least got a vibe for what your spirit is, and it felt a little bit trolly, just a little bit. Like, let me just put that out there and see what these guys say about this. Some of the language.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure that if Dave didn't know me, he just would have quote tweeted it and tore me to pieces.
Right. Yeah, and he was nice, too, because he knew who you were. All right, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. He's playing he's playing with us a little bit. Not to say that's not a legit opinion that you can't have. I didn't feel like it came from a place of malevolence. Just you were just kind of having some fun and speaking your mind, which is okay, even though I don't fucking agree with it, and we can still talk about that too.
Yeah, no, the DMs, I got so many death threats that day. It was hilarious. Yao kids are horrible. Did you
really? Like a death threat,
dude? Like 19-year-old Yao kids who won't be in the Liberty Movement in 6 months.
Who never are they? Are they in Ron Paul? 19-year-old Yao kids?
They're told they should be. But you know,
fuck with those guys.
These are also the same people who think Cliff Maloney did nothing wrong.
Right. Yeah, hero worship. Got to get off that. Dude, I don't give a fuck. We're noticing that now. You know, people in the space are going after each other. I saw, you know, Pete was going through, and what Josh Pete's and these canceled. Guys are going. I saw. I mean, like, hey, look, I got my own beefs. So I don't go after. I don't jump into other people's beefs. But
I got involved tangentially in that beef just because of some personal relationships that dragged me into it. But like, I've had beef with Pete for a long time. About personal treatment and whatnot. Like, the man lists in his bio on the Libertarian Institute website, one of his crowning achievements is speaking at a conference that I organized, yet he still treats me like a fucking secondary piece of shit ever to anytime we see each other.
Yeah, it's not
a good. And, like, he annoys the shit out of me. And we had a big beef a couple months ago. I made a video about how Pete was slipping into the alt-right and he was fucking useless and worthless. That video blew the fuck up. It got bad enough that he started texting me. He's like, can we bury the hatchet? I'm sorry. I wouldn't have buried the hatchet with him if it weren't for Masha and Reed, who asked me to.
Yeah, they're both great.
And I wish I didn't.
I wish I didn't do it.
Like, when I finally saw, like, somebody sent me a screenshot, because he has me blocked on Twitter after the past week's drama. If somebody sent me a screenshot of, like, him saying, it's been a ride, but I'll no longer be the editor-in-chief of Libertarian Institute, I almost just texted Scott Horton, like, so you're hiring? Because, like, I don't know if you saw it, but I had a...
And he'd be like, no, I saw you talking shit on Ron Paul, motherfucker, no.
I did a big, long, like, tweet thread about, like, why I think Pete's a piece of shit, and why I think Pete doesn't deserve his place in the pantheon of liberty minds in the modern day, that he's just an ego, he doesn't have principles, he changes his mind every couple months, and if you disagree with him, even if you agree with something he used to say, you're wrong, and you're horrible, and you don't listen to him enough. The man only cares about his own ego and his own place in the hierarchy, nothing else. And I said that. The very first person to like it was Scott Horton.
Mm.
I screenshotted that immediately. Like, I was not expecting that. Like, 10
Trouble
minutes
in
later,
paradise. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 minutes later, Scott took his like off. But like, I got
it was
the
a
screenshot.
Reaction. Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you know, like, when you think about it, I mean, it's not everything should be politics, but like, Pete has been, and I've kind of had some interactions with Pete that weren't so positive over the past couple of months. The post-libertarian stuff is kind of just the way that they kind of shit on other people while doing it. I didn't love that. I'm not surprised that Scott and the Libertarian Institute are watching their reputation.
Right.
While there's like a post-libertarian, like, we're trying to get into libertarian, bro. You're already like out of that. So like, maybe we should. Yeah. I mean, I kind of understand it, but I was talking to Mike Heiss earlier today. I love that dude, but we were talking for hours, but it's crazy that this is all happening kind of right now. Like, this infighting, and separation and stuff, personalities like within our circles going at each other. And at the end of the day, I don't like that. I wish that like, the stronger voices and the pillars of the community could work it out. I'm not saying that is always going to be the way, but I wish that Josh wasn't beefing with the Mises Caucus right now. I wish that Pete wasn't beefing with whoever these other people are. I don't know that whole story, but I wish that wasn't the case.
You want the spark notes of it?
Yeah, sure.
Spark notes of it is... do you remember the drama between Jose Reed and Tappy a few months ago that ended up with Tappy and company and the lizard people trying to cancel me because they were mad at Jose?
So I don't know Tappy, but I know that there was like a girl who made some claims that were...
Tappy's like, she's just a woman online with a bunch of followers and simps who, whenever she's mad at somebody, they'll attack them and try and cancel them.
Mm.
And, everyone was going on and on about Kevin Hobby, and I was like, who the fuck is this guy? And like, I keep seeing posts like, Kevin Hobby did nothing wrong. Kevin Hobby did nothing wrong. And so I'm like, I just tweeted, I'm like, who is Kevin Hobby and why did he do nothing wrong? Now, I have a verified account with thousands of followers. The people posting this had like 11 to 15 followers on private accounts and were nobodies. Mine blew the fuck up and I started getting attacked. I'm like, I don't know who the fuck this guy is. And finally, after hundreds of comments, people attacking me, somebody explained who he is and what he did. I'm like, oh, fuck that guy. We should cancel him. And they're like, oh, he's already canceled. I'm like, then what the fuck is the big deal?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm out. But then Tabby just started going after me. And I think I had a tweet. Like, I quote tweeted her. I'm like, people who think there's no reason to hit a woman have never argued with this bitch. Which is a Bill Burr line. Like, I was literally just quoting a Bill Burr stand-up.
It's actually aggression, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but they tried to cancel me, and they tried to report my account, and fucking got out of hand. And then, like, shit quieted and settled down for, like, a couple months now. And then all of a sudden, somebody came out and said that Clint was... being a domestic abuse apologist because he was friends with Kevin Hobby. And Clint's like, I don't know who the fuck Kevin Hobby is. I'm not friends with him. And Clint made a thread. It's like, take this back, and tagged the girl that Kevin Hobby abused and said, take this back and clear my name. And people lost their minds again. And Stacy, the fiance of fuckface Pete Quinones, decided to devote her 24/7 breathing life to the drama. And afterwards, she doxed Clint.
Yeah, I saw that.
And she got canceled off the Twitter. She got canceled from Liberty Twitter. And then Pete put up a thread saying, because Jose made a post like, Pete, control your hole. That Masha made a post.
Fucking couldn't. Look, I try to stay out of people's beef, but I couldn't believe when I fucking saw that. I'm like, oh my God. Holy shit.
Masha posted like, fucking Pete, control your woman. Everyone's like, because nobody could get through to Stacy. Nobody could get her to stop. So I was like, all right, Pete might be the only one she listens to. Pete, control your fucking woman. And before people posted publicly, Clint tried to call Pete a number of times. And
texted, I did hear that too. Yeah.
And Pete just ignored him. And then Pete made a post. It's like, you're all beneath me. I'll never apologize. Fuck you. Talk to her. And it's like, oh, this guy's just a fucking asshole. And then that spiraled into him getting canceled for standing up for his fiance doxing somebody.
I'm wondering if he'll be canceled. I mean, I could tell he's losing some followers, and he lost his job, and he lost some shit. But I wonder how, I mean, he built up a thing. He's got a thing, and he's a smart guy.
He was posting something about, he lost like a fuck ton of Substacks. He lost money out of his pocket.
Oh, yeah. Like, he really did. I mean, I saw him put out like an apology today, and I hope that there's a lesson learned somewhere. And look, like I said, man, I hate to see this kind of, we shouldn't be doing this with our own people. Like, he's a smart guy.
We shouldn't be doing it with our own people. You're right. But at the same time, we're the ones who should be keeping our own accountable.
Absolutely. And that's what I told Mike earlier about this shit. So I don't like infighting when it's unhealthy or whatever. It's uncomfortable. At the same time, though, the mistake that all the old guard guys and like all power structures that ever start to like congregate, what they do is they get their little clique, they get their friends, and then they start to put their friends and their click above what the mission is.
Yep.
You get too friendly. You know, ask anybody in Delaware. That's something I've told them from the very beginning, and I've become very friendly with these people. But they'll tell you, Dave is not here to make friends. Dave is here to fucking do a thing. And I try to remember that because, yeah, like I'm not going to just vote for somebody because they're my friend. That's completely fucked. But I understand the urge, like support your boy or like whatever, right. Like loyalty, like. So it's a weird thing to navigate for me. I didn't think some of the stuff with the caucus would happen this early, but I guess, yeah, like once it gets to a point big enough, like, you know.
Here's the thing, with that stuff, with Josh and the caucus, I get Heiss's argument that it's more important to have enough people to cover the whole board than to go for specific positions. Like, if you have chair covered, great with Angela, vice chair is a secondary concern. If Josh runs for vice chair, who's running for at large to replace Josh? Like, that starts to become a question. At the same time, Josh has been on the LNC for 2 terms. He's built a very big name for himself, and he doesn't have a spotty voting record of being a prag piece of shit who wouldn't take a stand against corruption like Rod Sept did.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
I could see a world where Heiss and caucus leaders and people close to Josh have a talk with Josh and say, we want you to run for at large because we know you'll win at large.
Oh, they've offered him that. That's what they want him to do. He doesn't want to do it.
We want Rich Bowen to run for vice chair.
Isn't he done, or is he running?
I think he is, but like, if you could convince him, he'd be a perfect candidate. And I think Josh would be more receptive to people saying, we don't want you to run for vice chair because we don't want to risk losing a seat. If you're willing to run for re-election to your seat, you've got locked up, and support this guy for vice chair.
I'm not going to speak for him, dude, but I'm trying to learn about these guys. I watched an interview that the Oregon guys did with Rod Sept. I did the one that Florida did with Josh. I don't think Josh is interested in that, with doing anything except vice chair. I think he feels like he made a concession with not running for chair, and that this is going to be it. And I don't think he'll accept a nomination for at large. I could be wrong, but I don't know.
Like, at the same time, like, Josh, he does strike me as somebody who cares more about the mission than the position.
I hope he does. I want him to stay on that board. I was grateful that he was in Boston.
And I get the argument against him too, like saying he's overwhelmed, too many kids, big family. I get, like, the LNC is not a easy job. It's not an easy ride. It's another part-time job you're taking on.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said about the whole post-libertarian argument of, you got to have your house in order before you tell other people how to fix theirs. Sure. That was our final shot at Pete, was like, hey, like, how are you telling people how to live their lives when yours is a mess? Like, you're an alcoholic with no principles and your woman runs crazy on you. But like, everything I see, Josh has got his life straightened out. 4 years ago, that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. He was bouncing around, but he's got his life together. So if it's time for him to run for a position with real weight behind it, it's time for him to run. But my problem with the caucus lining up behind Rod Sept isn't that they picked someone other than Josh. If they picked someone other than Josh that had principles, I'd be less upset about it.
Yeah. Well, so I'm just starting to pay attention to these people, but he was good on Delaware. He worked pretty hard on that to help us out. New Hampshire too. He was pretty good with you guys, right? As well. Yeah. So he's like, from what I understand, because I've had some of these same concerns that I imagine most Mises Caucus guys do. Like, what the fuck? This guy's a prag. He's been here. Are you serious? This is what we're going to do. And after watching that interview, like, he comes from like international government studies. He like worked at the UN, fucking tried to get a George H.W. Bush job in like the 80s. I'm like, are you fucking serious? Like, this is not what I would shoot for. This is not my kind of guy. But, he has apparently put his neck out for just doing, not necessarily Mises Caucus, but doing what is right enough times where it's kind of like isolated him from the people that he might have used to call.
He did it once with Karen Ann. He stood up for Karen Ann, and that was enough to isolate him. But it doesn't change the fact that, like, he didn't stand up for New Hampshire. He didn't stand up for Delaware until he'd already lost favor. He didn't stand up for people in Massachusetts when Ashley Shade was kicking people out of the party. He didn't stand up for people who were disenfranchised in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't stand up until he got put down.
Yeah, and he's a politician. So, right. And again, I would say, I don't know him. I don't know what his true goals are, or, you know, if he did all the most recent decisions because they were morally correct or because he was politically setting himself up. You know, that's a possibility too. If you have ambitions, you might want to align yourself with some people who you might think have power in 6 months. You know what I mean? Like, just,
yeah,
it's pretty simple.
And I get that, but like, from the people who are about to have power in 6 months, like, don't tie yourself to a liability.
I get that too.
Like, and that's my whole thing to the Mises Caucus and people. Like, if you don't want Josh to run for vice chair, then you need to find someone better than Josh, or at least as good as Josh, to run for vice chair.
Yeah, I think that's their guy. I think that's who they have pegged. I think that they have a whole slate they're going to run. like that they want people to get elected. And I think they're all Mises Caucus with the exception of him. But yeah, I get that, dude. I really do. I'm torn on it. It's one of those things that doesn't make me happy that there's like, I don't know, this decision ahead of us. But.
Well, it's not going to be my decision. I'm not going to be a delegate this year.
Yeah. Okay.
My first time sitting out, because for the first time, I'm not worried about who's going to be representing New Hampshire.
This is a good problem to have. This is beautiful. I'm happy for you, man. That's really great.
So, unfortunately, I think like you're going to be really worried about who's representing Delaware. So you're going to have to go.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be there.
And there's probably going to be a floor fight about which delegation from Delaware to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a great time. This has been a great conversation. Thank you for coming on tonight, Dave. Where can people follow you?
Yeah, there it is. Dave versus Goliath 1 on Twitter. Follow me there. I'm on Odyssey and YouTube. Dave versus Goliath, Facebook, Instagram. And I got some t-shirts up at Teespring.
All right, everybody, go give Dave a follow, keep in touch, and check out the show on O'DonnellForLiberty.com, where you can download all the audio podcasts on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, everywhere else, or visit over LRN.fm if you want to listen on the air. We're in the rotation. Same rotation as Ron Paul and Tom Woods. Oh, you can listen to us on the radio with LRN.fm. Give it a listen. Give it a check out. And until next time, thanks for tuning in. Be free.
Thanks again for tuning in and joining us tonight. Make sure you hit that like button and leave a comment below to let us know your thoughts. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live. If you enjoyed this content, you can join our production team on Patreon by following the link in the description. And don't forget to follow on social media and join our community Discord channel by following the links in the description as well. The best part of all of this is the community that we're building and growing. So go ahead and join us. And thanks once again to our awesome sponsors and patrons for making all of this possible. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts. So until next time, everybody, be free.